Welcome back, folks. Happy Friday. And if you are celebrating or continuing to celebrate the week of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, Haksameach. And with that, we have a whole lot to talk about today. It's another one of those weeks where ultimately the news is nothing that we shouldn't have expected, or at least in some cases couldn't have expected. And maybe it'll turn out okay, but certainly a lot to be paying attention to. Any case, got David Justice on the line with me, and just he and I again today. So, David, let's get right to it. There are so many things to talk about, but I guess when it comes to one that I really want to make sure we address that people should be paying more attention to than the press is going to, because they're going to dismiss it and say, hey, this is just another attempt by the guy that we want to kill. If we can't kill him, we want to make sure he at least doesn't ever get to be on a ballot that's legitimate again. And that is, let's see if we can't execute lawfare on every level. So the court is hearing oral arguments about what is called presidential immunity, and it's kind of fascinating. Anyway, let me say good morning, and how are you doing? Let's get your take on things to start off today.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of things going on this week. The thing that I'm most fascinated with, besides the lawfare being executed against Trump, is the student protests going on now across the country, and how there's an uprising against Jewish influence and pro-Palestinian. And it's I think it's a great time to begin a conversation, and I think we should be having it already, about distinguishing both sides, because I'm hearing both sides, and I'm feeling like a ping pong ball comprehending what's going on. And also, of course, the Great Reset, the Green New Deal is always on my radar, because I know they're trying to reset the monetary system so that the monetary powers retain control. But go ahead, Mark. Let's start off with your take on this immunity argument.
Well, we've got a lot of things today, and I honestly, David, was going to do what you often do, and that is to suggest that the so-called student protests are yet another distraction, because for the most part, let's be honest, these are blithering morons that have been miseducated and dumbed down and indoctrinated to the point they don't know the truth. There was a video that I did think was funny, if humiliating for the airheads involved. A couple of women that were at the NYU campus being interviewed by somebody who was pointing out, hey, why are you here? Well, we're here to support Palestine. Well, and we're really upset about what NYU is doing. And the implication of the question, yeah, well, what's NYU doing? Well, I'm not really sure I know what NYU is doing, but I should. And, and then they go on, and she turns to a friend and says, do you know why we're here? And no, I don't really know much about this either. And well, yeah, I guess neither do I. And that was the upshot. The thing went viral, because essentially it's two morons admitting we're here protesting. We got nothing better to do. Meanwhile, the world is burning down, and we're clueless about anything when it comes to actual facts. So I guess to a certain extent, David, that kind of sums up a lot of what I think we're seeing from that whole left indoctrinated, dumbed down side of the aisle. You're right. There is an element of Nazi Germany here that we've seen before, but we haven't, it's not like we haven't seen that play out in a number of respects. It's not just Jews. It's white people. It's Christians. It's anybody that's ever read the Constitution in their life. It's white privilege. You name it. It's all about knee-jerk reactions and making sure that you do not think and do not connect the dots. Go ahead, and then I'll go back to the place where people have to think, and that's the real barrier, which has to do with what the court is arguing about. Go ahead.
Well, we know that we've talked about Cliven and Piven's, I don't know if you call it a doctrine or a teaching, about how the government
it's a mechanism.
It's a mechanism. That's a good word, too. A couple of college professors were explaining that the way to bring down the government from within is to overwhelm it and create the chaos. And we know that the illegals coming in is creating chaos. We know that chaos is here's the thing about chaos. The governments of the world rule best in chaos. I think they actually enjoy the chaos.
Oh, absolutely.
As long as the people are not knowledgeable and don't know the truth, then they can be blown and tossed by every wind of doctrine. And that's what's going on today, is we've got so much, it's too much information. It's hard to sift through it. And, for the most part, this environment was created so that they could retain their power and move us into this new world order. And so that's the strategy, is the chaos, Mark.
Well, yeah, and there are two elements that I'll comment briefly on there. One, chaos is kind of the opposite of shalom. And I had a coffee cup at one point that had that. And essentially it was the Hebrew letters and at least one of the standard understandings of the Hebrew letters. And if you remember, Mayim, for example, is a word that's associated with water, but water is kind of chaotic, and fish in the water are kind of chaotic. So essentially, shalom was a way of looking at it was destroy the authority that establishes chaos. And ultimately, the authority that establishes chaos is the alternative, the adversary to the one true creator. So that makes sense. And that's essentially what people are talking about. Now, you're right with respect to Cloud Piven. I'll make one more comment there. What these were outright communists, and they were basically saying, hey, you know, once you establish socialism, then the rest of the trick to get to communism is to destroy socialism by proving that it doesn't work and that the only alternative then is pure communism. So what they do is they say, we get a lot of people on the dole, and we get the governments bailing out people and, undermining the idea of working for a living and so forth. And once you get a lot of people acclimated to being on the take, now you get so many people on the take and you increase the benefits so much that you just break the system. And when the system breaks and the people are really upset, the only alternative is going to be go the rest of the way to pure communism. So that's essentially Cloud Priven's strategy to bring down a socialist system and replace it with what they really wanted all along. And that was, of course, what Karl Marx and others, the Fabian socialists were pushing ultimately to head to. So we're seeing that. And the students that are clueless are part of it. Also, of course, is this idea of bringing in all of these leftist Islamic types that hate the system. They hate the Republic. They hate the Constitution. They hate the Bill of Rights. They hate free speech. And when you combine that with a bunch of morons that don't know what it is that they're even supposed to be understanding, and because they've been mistaught, well, then that all fits into the same equation. Now, let's turn, because I do want to spend some time talking about the Supreme Court situation. And I think it's fascinating. I encourage people, watch as much of that as you can stand. And it's almost difficult to know where to start. But ultimately, one of the places where I think it's where it's kind of interesting is Samuel Alito. He was probably one of the standouts. As it turns out, even people like Kavanaugh certainly expect Clarence Thomas to be able to see through it. Even the Chief Justice, Roberts, managed to kind of cut through some of the BS. And I heard a great summary from some folks on the War Room with Steve Bannon. And essentially what they were saying is that, look, a lot of these justices seem to be seeing through the game. They weren't buying it. They were recognizing the BS. And there is a lot of truth in there. But what frustrated me, and I guess I expect folks to see this as well, and maybe Alito especially and Clarence Thomas were kind of aware of the elephant in the room. But let me read a couple of comments from one of the most blithering idiots ever to put on a black robe, much less to sit on the supposed Supreme Court. They call her Ketanji Brown Jackson, and I see the accolade. She's the dumbest woman on the high court ever, doesn't even know what a woman is. And she said the following, and this is ignoring the elephant in the room to the max, and I'll quote it. I can't play the recording here live, but presidents from the beginning of time, she said. I wonder if she knows that we didn't have presidents until the beginning of the Constitution. Anyway, they had understood that that's a possibility. What? Doing bad things, breaking the law. That what might be has kept this office from turning into the kind of crime center that I'm envisioning. But once we say, no criminal liability, Mr. President, you can do whatever you want. Well, she said, I'm worried that we would have a worse problem than the president feeling constrained to follow the law while he's in office, unquote. This, while there is a blithering moron who stole the office and who, while he was vice president, wasn't constrained by the rule of law, not only did he take bribes, not only did he undermine, along with others, the elected legitimate government of Ukraine, why? So that they could keep their criminals and their gravy train going, and he could continue to take bribes, but worse, then he committed absolute treason on behalf of, lots of people that were paying him off, but especially the Communist Chinese Party, and then undermined an election. So the elephant in the room, in other words, is they're all talking about whether attorneys general will advise the president properly. And is the attorney general advising the president that something is constitutional? Does that constitute an absolute defense? Well, if his name is Merrick Garland, you know that the guy hates the Constitution, and he doesn't give a damn what the Constitution says, whether it's the Bill of Rights or anything else. So the elephant is in the room here is they're pretending to ignore the fact that if there ever was a president that deserved to be indicted while in office, he's in there now, but he doesn't even have a legitimate claim on the office. So, of course, the constitutional remedy, and we're not going to see this exercise, is to first impeach the president for what? Constitution says it, high crimes and misdemeanors, and then, once he is convicted, then try him for treason and all the other things, and do what the president is supposed to do, which is to try people and see that the law is faithfully executed. When he won't, and when he is out, then you convict him of treason and do what the Constitution says there too. So it's kind of funny. The story from the Gateway Pundit says that Ketanji Braxton Brown Jackson is truly stupid. She walked right into it, and the attorney John Sawyer dunked on her, saying, "I respectfully disagree with what you just said." And I'm thinking, nope. You don't respectfully disagree. She's an idiot. But it's, I guess, impolite to tell a Supreme Court justice that you don't even know what the Constitution says. Why the hell are you sitting there wearing that robe? But he says this is the regime we've actually operated under for the past 234 years. There has been an expectation based on 234 years of unbroken, you know, essentially political continuance up until recently. And it was with Obama where we saw faithlessness that became institutionalized. Anyway, go ahead. There's a lot of meat here.
Well, there was a lot of words there. I'd like to distill it down to some simple principles that you did mention. There is a remedy for a president that has gone rogue and is operating in a criminal capacity, and that's impeachment. And so what Jack Smith, he's the special prosecutor, using lawfare against Trump, he's trying to take Trump on after the fact, after Trump leaves office. He's trying to bring him into the federal judicial system to execute a law against Trump. But while Trump's claiming, no, wait a minute, I have presidential immunity. And so, of course, now the question of presidential immunity is on the table. And the crux issue is going to come down to whether presidents can be charged while they're sitting in office other than impeachment, which is what's intriguing to me. And I'm just going to make a prediction what's going to happen in the Supreme Court. They're going to throw this case out. And so, no, the president does have immunity because he does. And there is a remedy for presidents that commit high crimes and misdemeanors, like you said, and that's the law and order system that America is founded on. And so what we're witnessing is a complete breakdown in a system of law and order, and the lefties up here, and as being led by Jack Smith, are attempting to take this man down so that he can't run for office again because he's too much of a threat to their dysfunctional system that they thrive within. So there's my take on it for now. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, okay, and this is why I said we wanted to talk about this up front, because there is so much here, and there's so much that I encourage folks, take a look at some of the videos up online. I want to go through some of those and break them down, because ultimately the question is America, have we made the entire leap to hyperspace and become a banana republic? And essentially, Trump's legal team's argument is, in the vernacular, in a banana republic, the new guy comes in, and the new guy executes the old guy and accuses him of crimes committed while in office. And that is essentially what the left is trying to do. They're coming in and they're saying, look, we stole this election. We stole it fair and square. Our guy's committed bribery and crimes against humanity, and our guy's been literally selling out the country, and our guy is continuing to do all kinds of things that if we had a constitution would still disqualify him from ever being seated. We know he put his hand on the Bible and lied, but we're going to ignore all of that. The point is, we're going to go convict this other guy who was in the office before of doing things that were bad, like documents that he had every power to declassify while he was sitting president. By the way, Obama did not declassify the documents, nor did the vice president have the power to do so, that the criminal that's in the office now had, and still probably has, who knows, sitting in his garage next to his Corvette and other places. So the point is, yeah, crimes that that the senile guy could not, in fact, commit lawfully. The guy who is the elected president still did, in fact, declassify and had the authority to do. But one is being prosecuted, the other isn't. So there's a problem. But wait, the bigger problem is they're simply pointing out that if, in fact, you can go after a president once he's out of office and make stuff up, then we do not have a political system. We don't have a peaceful transfer of power. We literally have, well, as you put it, complete chaos. And so I guess I will respectfully disagree. I think it would be interesting. I'm hearing a lot of scuttlebutt from people that know the inside of the court. They're saying that this will probably be 5-4 or 6-3. The question is whether the woman on the court that was the Trump appointee will eventually decide to go along with the rest or not. Obviously, Alito and Clarence Thomas and the others, probably Kavanaugh and even Roberts, at minimum, will vote to say this is BS. But will they say, come on, stick a fork in it? I don't know that, especially Roberts and some of the others have the chutzpah, the integrity to go that far. So I guess I would respectfully disagree. Rather than throwing it all out, they'll probably just do a partial thing and say, okay, look, this is wrong. You guys are going after him politically. No, they won't actually come out even to say that. What they'll do is they'll remand it back to the court from what I'm hearing, because that'll be the first cave-in procedure, and say, no, you can't get away with this. That'll kick it off until after the election, and then we'll redress it. They'll send it back, arguably, to the same criminal that sent it up here in the first place, the District of Columbia Criminal Court. So it may not be anything other than just kicking the can down the road, but at least they probably won't let them get away with this level of perfidy. Go ahead.
Well, as you're talking, it's dawning on me, and of course, this, I don't know, the elephant in the room. Should these guys that are using, we call it lawfare against Trump, should they be successful and they end up taking Trump out of the picture, then what they've done in the process of doing that is they have destroyed the Constitution, they have destroyed law and order, they've established a dysfunctional regime, and from now on, the dysfunctional regime will be in power, and there will be no restraints on the power of government, which is what the Constitution ultimately is for, is to
bind
define
them down,
limit the power. And so the what's going on here is more than just Trump. It's about destroying the republic from within, so that the people that are in control now will never ever lose control again. And no, we are living right now within a banana republic, and the only restraint against that banana republic is, well, we're watching it in the Supreme Court. We're watching the final moments of a constitution being unraveled. And so they're using Trump as canary in the coal mine, if you will. If they can successfully destroy this man, then they've won the war, and we are already living in total chaos, Mark.
All right. Well, let's talk again about some of the specifics. You're right about the lawfare, and there are, by the way, so many other pieces that fit that just going through those today, we'll be blessed if we manage to finish all of the things that even tie into it. But I kind of alluded to the elephant in the room. Probably the closest we got to it, and this is a great question, it came from Justice Brett Kavanaugh, who asked this scumbag of a prosecutor, the liar for the deep state, Michael Dreeben, who was a former Mueller goon as well, the obvious question. Remember Barack Hussein Obama? He killed civilians, U.S. citizens, and Kavanaugh asked Dreeben the following. How about President Obama's drone strikes? In other words, remember, they were trying to, prior to all of this, make this major distraction. And the attorneys were all saying, well, what if the president ordered SEAL Team 6 to go in and assassinate his political opponent? Well, that's exactly what they have been doing. They have ordered assassinations overseas. Originally, I can remember as a young man hearing how they had overturned that. Now we don't want the president to go assassinating people overseas. And they allegedly quit it, but no, they really didn't. And then Obama, after he killed, an American citizen with a drone strike, said, I'm particularly good at killing. So that's what Kavanaugh is asking. And essentially, Dreeben says, well, that doesn't count. Those were wedding goers, and those were bad people. So the Office of Legal Counsel looked at this very carefully and determined, number one, that the federal murder statute that's not what we're talking about, you liar, does not apply to the executive branch. But the president didn't personally carry out the strike. So he's off the hook. This is absolutely the kind of crap. It's transparent BS that the court absolutely cannot fail to see through. Because if the court doesn't call them out on this and say, come on, how stupid do you think we are? The American people will. And I think that's what's going to force the court's hand here. Go ahead, David.
Well, you know, it's easy to be upset right now because of the mayhem that is being created by the abuse of the law. And it's interesting to see how the Supreme Court will handle this abuse of the law when it comes before them. This is why, and this is, I hope the American people can finally wake up and realize what the Constitution actually is and what's really going on in the folks' attempt to destroy law and order. We're in the last chapter, or we're at an opportunity to turn things around. But we're running out of time, and what's really going to get us out of this is knowing the truth about who we are and who the government is and how things work, and we're being taken advantage of because of our ignorance. And so this dog and pony show going on out there is there's a lot of distraction to keep us in our state of cognitive dissonance, which is where ultimately this puts us, because it keeps us from focusing on the ultimate question, or the ultimate issue, I think, which is follow the money. We got a collapsing economy, and everything that they can do to keep our eyes off that, they feel like they're being successful. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, okay, and I agree with you, but I think there's more to it, and that's why I want to make sure this week that we dive just a bit deeper into some of the other things. You know, we do talk about the money frequently. If you have an entire system built on dishonest weights and measures and an abomination, and the Creator promises that it carries a curse and He'll tear it down, well, we're seeing that. But along the way, you're right, the kind of the related point is, if you don't know your rights, you don't have any. If you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it. So many of these old sayings that we're now seeing literally writ large if we pay attention. Here is Clarence Thomas's question. He asked this attorney for the scumbag pretending to be a prosecutor, Jack Smith, why previous presidents haven't been prosecuted for various coups in various places and other operations. Like, for example, the famous, at least among those who know the Constitution, Operation Mongoose, where the CIA under JFK, and I don't know if JFK actually authorized it, or the CIA just claimed he did. They killed him eventually anyway. But anyway, the Operation Mongoose was about terrorist attacks carried out against Cuban civilians. So Thomas asked the question, and you can guess the answer. Oh, the distant past. Yep, he said, certain presidents have engaged in activities like Operation Mongoose when I was a teenager, but they weren't prosecuted. Why? If what you're saying is right, it would seem that would have been a ripe time for the criminal prosecution of someone. Well, said Tom, said Dreeben, that's a central question. The reason why there have not been prior criminal prosecutions is that they were not crimes. Isn't it funny? Right here, you've seen it. This is kind of like the umpire, right? They ain't nothing till I tell you that there's something. These aren't crimes because we say they're not. And there it is, folks. If it's a leftist, if it's a communist that's committing these crimes, if it's the deep state, if it's a senile guy just signing his name, they're not crimes because we say so. On the other hand, doesn't matter whether they're actually written in law or not. If we claim they're crimes, they are. Yeah. folks, this is the second half of the Drive Time Friday show. I'm your Colorado-based host, Mark Hall. Got David Justice on the line again this morning. And we have spent most of the time this morning talking about, well, a multi-pronged attack on truth, justice, and the American way, but especially via lawfare on the entire concept of the rule of law and whether we had a constitution or whether we still have a constitution. And one of the things that I think is really telling, again, I urge all the listeners here, if you didn't get a chance, take and look at some of the audio, that's what you're going to mostly find, of the various justices, the idiots and those that are talking about, or at least talking around the elephant in the room, via questions of these people that are trying to say, look, when we decide to kill somebody, if they're deserving of being dead because they don't sign up for the deep state, then we can do whatever we want. In other words, we will redefine the law. And that's what they're doing here. They're saying the law is what we tell you it is, nothing more, nothing less. Presidents that follow the law, in other words, those that do our bidding, they're okay. But anybody that doesn't, we'll hang them. Doesn't matter whether they're in office or out of office. Doesn't matter what the Constitution says. Doesn't matter whether there's a statute or not. That's what they're showing with Trump in New York. We're going to just make things up and call these misdemeanors, even after the statute of limitations expired, we're going to call them felonies because, hey, we want to get him. So here's the question. This is Samuel Alito, one of the better constitutionalists on the court, who destroyed, says the piece from the Gateway Pundit, DOJ prosecutor Michael Dreeben with one question. All right. And essentially the question was this. If the president gets advice from the attorney general that something is lawful, is that an absolute defense? In other words, if the president, this is called a reliance defense in law, the president is supposed to say, the attorney general can tell me what the Constitution says. You'd think some of them would be smart enough to read it for themselves, but honestly, I don't know that we've had one of those in decades. That includes Trump, sadly, but it especially includes people like Biden who read the Constitution and then say, the hell with it, I'm going to turn it upside down, especially when it comes to shall not be infringed or the right of the people to peaceably assemble, that kind of thing. Anyway, if the president gets advice from the attorney general that something is lawful, is that an absolute defense? He asked Dreeben. And here's the answer. Yes, I think that it is. All right, here comes the 1-2 punch from Alito. But won't that give presidents incentive to be sure to pick an attorney general who will reliably tell them that it's lawful to do whatever the hell, and I put that in there, whatever the president wants to do, if there's any possible argument in favor of it, said Alito. And he nailed it, folks, because the elephant in the room is we know that that's exactly what's happened with the scumbag that's in there now, Merrick Garland, who basically says the law is what I say it is. If we want to attack people, we will. And by the way, they slammed him in because they have a they had a Senate that essentially was so limp-wristed that they said, oh, yeah, we'll put this criminal in there. We want to get this guy. They know he'll do that. Quote, said Dreeben, I think the constitutional structure protects against that risk. The president nominates the attorney general, and the Senate provides advice and consent. No, they provide a slam dunk and a rubber stamp. That line of questioning also dovetails with other questions asked by Gorsuch related to subordinate liability. In other words, what about the question of presidents trying to do what the law says? And the answer is, again, the deep state tells you what the law says. And we'll tell you after the fact if we feel like changing it. Alito asked Dreeben, what about Franklin Delano Roosevelt's decision to intern Japanese Americans during World War II? Couldn't that have been charged? Well, said Dreeben, today, yes, because we will charge anybody we feel like, although he's a good Democrat, so we probably won't charge him. You know, it's the transparency here, David, that I think is so clear, and that's what's fascinating. We'll see how it plays out. Go ahead.
The transparency that it's so obvious what they're doing, you mean, the transparency?
Among other things, yeah. It's obvious what they're doing. It's obvious the Constitution doesn't mean anything. It's obvious that some people are above the law. George Orwell had it right. Some animals are more equal than others. It's transparent on every single level.
Well, what we're watching and the meltdown that we're watching is the failure because of the corruption within the people that have occupied the government. It's no longer a government. So we've got people now that are defending their positions that have no basis in law and order. So if that's what you mean by transparent, if it's transparent that it's the end of a country because they have no regard for true law and order, just the law and relative law and order that they want to use to subjugate the entire planet to a arbitrary and capricious will.
All right.
This is the fall of America. We're watching it.
And the question is, will people learn anything from it? Now, I don't know that it's possible at this point to prevent it. I think that, you know, as we've quoted many times, Reverend Billy Graham said that, you know, if the United States is not judged by God, then he, the Creator, will owe a sincere apology to Sodom and Gomorrah. And I think most of us recognize that. I look at the rule of law and say, can it even be saved at this point? Well, we'll see whether or not the court will pay lip service to it and how far they'll go. I have hopes that this might be so transparent that they might actually show a backbone. I suspect what we'll show is a little bit of subvertebrate development, and that'll probably limit it. But I'd like to be wrong. Anyway, in Arizona, we had another case, and this was timed, kind of fascinating. And it's either a really stupid move or a really obvious move. Okay, so you have an attorney general who's not really the attorney general anyway, Chris Mays, leftist communist lawfare artist, who essentially was slammed into office. She supposedly won. She stole the election by 280 votes. And guess what? There are still 9,000 votes years later that are uncounted. But what did she do? She came out before the witch hunt and she said, quote, we absolutely have to get President Sick, you know, the scumbag senile guy, reelected. She said the quiet part out loud. So then she follows up with the 1-2 punch. She charged all of the people who were Trump's slate of electors in Arizona, who basically waited until they saw that there was going to be a scam going on. And they went ahead and they essentially signed their names, is all they did, to a list indicating that they were going to stand by their commitment to the guy that actually won their state. So what did she do? She charged all of them just months before the election, but literally during the very same time frame that this argument was headed to the Supreme Court, with felonies, 9 counts of conspiracy, fraudulent schemes and articles, artifices, fraudulent practices, forgery for signing their name. Defendants and unindicted co-conspirators, meaning Trump, schemed to prevent the lawful transfer of the presidency to keep unindicted co-conspirator number one, i.e. the elected president, in office against the will of Arizona voters, says the indictment. Get this, against the will of Arizona voters, even though they couldn't vote, their votes weren't counted, and here it is 2 years later, and they're still not counted in the case of this scumbag masquerading as attorney general. This is so transparent, David, that it ought to help buttress the case, because this is what lawfare allows, and this is what happens when people are not held accountable. And ultimately, I think the real question is not just will the court do the right thing, but will these people be tried for treason and tried for the real crimes that they're committing to try to cover up their act of treason that they've gotten away with so far? Go ahead.
Well, what I see here is unhinged desperation. The treason is so obvious, like you say, transparent in our face. These people have nothing to lose and everything to gain by going for a full court press in the narrative that they've created. If they're successful in the narrative, they end up with control in the end. I don't know. Are these people getting paid, or do they genuinely believe what they're doing? Or are they in it so much that they have everything at stake to lose if they lose? We're watching absolute malevolence, and I use that word emphatically, malevolent evil operating, attacking the truth of the reality that exists outside their narrative. They have to sustain their narrative in order to survive what happens next, because what happens next is they get charged for treason and they're looking at the death penalty. So this is why they're operating from an unhinged, delusional frame of reference. And those of us that love the truth, you know, it's obvious to us. And I think what they're doing is trying to keep as many people as they can, as many Americans as they can, asleep while they race to the finish line in hope that they can beat Trump to the finish line. Go ahead, Mark.
Okay, well, let's pile one more bit of, it's being revealed information on top of this. yesterday, the Gateway Pundit, and I think some others, revealed some emails that were hidden by the Department of Justice and the other co-conspirators here that had to do with Obama and various elements of the criminal regime that stole the election, conspiring with the FBI, and that's no surprise, and the National Archives when it came to trying to set up the president, the elected president, and essentially lie to him, lie to his staff, and not tell him what they intended to do. And essentially what the documents show is that it was all contrived and set up in advance to spring it on him and say, aha, gotcha, now we're going to go ahead and do what they've been doing ever since. So it's another bit of evidence, in other words, that they pre-planned this and sprung it. But that's not the most interesting case. The most interesting one, I think, has to do with Harvey Weinstein. Now, remember, this is a rapist. He was convicted of rape, and he was convicted of multiple charges in multiple cases, two felony counts, rape and criminal assault. But now, this is interesting, and what happened was the last trial in New York was another sham and a scam, and they basically were so out to get this guy that they did a whole bunch of, well, let's just call it, they trumped him. They pulled a... they brought in the hookers. They brought in previous things to try to disparage his character that were not admissible in the case. In other words, they tried to say, look, it doesn't matter whether he's guilty of rape in this case or not. Look what a bad guy he is. And now the New York Supreme Court has overturned the rape conviction because they're basically saying, look, you know, we're at least going to pay lip service to this concept of the rule of law and the rules of evidence and so forth. Now, here's the point, and now there's all kinds of shrieking, as you might expect. Here's a lead headline from the Daily Mail. Me Too backfires. Rapist Harvey Weinstein may walk free, warns Maureen Callahan. Oh, and the leftists are all outraged. U.S. rotten justice has done more damage to women than this monster ever could. Bull, you know what. Okay, she's missing the whole point. What the court here did was to say, you know what, in spite of the literal mentality of a mob to get this guy by any means necessary, and it's the same thing we're seeing with Trump, we are going to at least pay lip service to proper procedure, rules of procedure. Now, the truth is, he's guilty of multiple rapes. He ain't leaving. He's not going anywhere. And everybody that's been paying attention that has half a brain says, no, Weinstein is not going to walk free. He's going to be convicted in a number of places. They're going to retry this one. All the court said was, look, and by the way, there are those that are suggesting, I think this is kind of fascinating, David, that the New York Supreme Court is actually sending a message to some of the other New York courts that, look, you guys are screwing the pooch here by being so over-the-top nutso about getting Trump by any means necessary that you are completely shafting the whole, well, our credibility. We're upset about that. So that's what's interesting about the Weinstein case. That has nothing to do with Weinstein, whether he's not a bad guy or not. It has to do with whether or not they will literally play fast and loose with their own rules just to make sure that they get people when it matters. And that is essentially what the New York case might have said here. Pay attention to what's going on, because on every front, the fact that they're wanting to play fast and loose with the law is now becoming transparently obvious. Go ahead, David.
Well, and the court there in New York said that the prosecutors were basically performing a trick and ruled that the types of witnesses that were used against Weinstein serve only to taint the minds of the jury, and that's exactly what's going on in Trump's case.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it appears that the New York Supreme Court may have been sending a message down to the lower court, you know, we're going to reverse you, even assuming arguendo that you get a conviction in this court. Go ahead.
That's a very good point, and that was well put, because that's exactly what they're doing. That is the whole case against Trump in New York. It has nothing to do with whether or not there's actually a crime. There wasn't. They're not going to hear. I'm sure the jury is not going to hear, except unless the defense is allowed to produce the evidence, and I know the crook judge will probably try to stop it. But, you know, remember, the judges will require an oath of the jurors. You will judge the facts only, and the law as I give it to you. Well, the law as he gives it to them will be made up because there's no crime here. And the prosecutor, Alvin Bragg, has not been able to show a crime. And they're basically making stuff up. This is a jury that is going to hear all kinds of emotional evidence so that they will accept that when we make stuff up, oh, it must be okay. And that is not the rule of law. And by the way, it's so transparent that even if you get a bunch of stupid New York jurors who hate Trump already to sign off on it, Well, at least they'll have accomplished what they really want, which is the Civil War. We'll see how that plays out. So I think on a lot of these elements, David, are kind of coming together here. The court at this point, the Supreme Court, I believe, knows that not only are they being watched, literally the fate of the Republic hangs on them. And I suspect maybe even Amy Coney Barrett, that'll be one of the swing votes, as we're being told. Does she have the chutzpah to actually stand up and say, I won't stand by for the destruction of the Republic by signing off with the scumbags? That'll be telling. Go ahead.
It's not an understatement, or maybe it is an understatement, to say that we're looking down the barrel of civil war. But I think that, and we know, we now have some evidence that, Biden and Obama are directly involved with these things through back channels. And they're the ones that stand the most to lose. So it would only follow that, yeah, they're going to push for war, because that's going to be their smokescreen to get out of trouble. So they're willing to take this whole thing down to prevent them from having to stand accountable to the American people for treason. We have a few months left. Here we go. We're in the home stretch. Now this is where times are going to get real interesting.
Exactly. Well, there's a couple other stories. We've got about 5 minutes left. I want to just kind of shotgun a few other examples. There was a Biden double gaffe in front of a bunch of union folks in Pennsylvania, and basically he said, you're going to choose freedom over democracy in one case, and in another case he said, essentially, how many times does Trump have to prove that we can't be trusted? And what was funny was that was a Freudian slip, and it got some coverage among the left. As far as the right was concerned, it got some coverage among the right. The left basically just said, they quoted it, and they put the word, how many times does he have to prove not we can't be trusted, but that he can't be trusted. So they corrected his gaffe, even though it was a Freudian slip. So we see that. In Arizona, remember the rancher that was tried first for first-degree murder, but they couldn't get away with that. They had to drop it to second-degree murder. And the killing of an invader on his property, and there's no evidence that he actually fired the fatal shot, and it turns out that they could not get a conviction. They tried to rig the jury. They failed. They had voir dire. They got a whole bunch of people on there, but they couldn't get a unanimous conviction that he was guilty of murder. So you know what happens. The concept of trial by jury is supposed to be 12 people, peers of the individual involved. It's great if they know him, because then they can judge more appropriately whether or not he really broke the law or not. Well, we don't have that anymore. And what we used to have was, all it took was one juror to say no to a bogus law, and the man would go free. Well, in this case, guess what? The judge declared a mistrial. We're going to keep trying him and trying him until we get the answer we want. Go ahead, David.
Due process. You know, in America, the Fifth Article and Amendment, you know, we call it the Bill of Rights, provides for due process. And once you've been tried and a jury of your peers is not unanimous, the case is dismissed. So there's reversible error. When that case gets taken up, you can't overrule a jury. You can't declare a mistrial. So that's an appeal.
Well, they've been
issue.
Doing that. But, they've been getting away with that for years, unfortunately. You're right. What we don't have anymore is what was called trial by jury in the Constitution. Unfortunately, they have essentially been able to get away with this by declaring these mistrials. I wish you were right, but I'm not sure that that's what we'll see, especially not in Arizona. You know what the scumbag fake attorney general is going to do.
Right. Well, you know, this is the banana republic that we've inherited, but we've been here. This is nothing new. It's just that now it's visible because they're going after a whole high profile figure. And should they be successful in taking him down, then it's over. And, so this is where the ultimate war is being fought. And that is the front line of this battle. And Trump finds himself on it. And so, you know, this is what we're dealing with. Go ahead.
All right. Well, here you go. This one is almost – it would be humorous if it wasn't such a kind of an encapsulation of all the fraud that we're seeing. This is the headline. Just came up. It was at the top of the news literally before we began the show this morning of the Daily Mail. And it said, Biden aides are terrified that the senile 81-year-old shuffle – in other words, this guy doesn't even walk like he has a brain anymore – is making him look too old. Gee, do you think? So now now they're doing everything they can to try to pretend that he's not too old to even fake his ex on the executive orders and to read teleprompters. They have him surrounded by protective staff. Senior aides now surround the senile guy whenever he walks to Marine One. Aides believe it draws less attention to Biden's elderly, senile-looking, Alzheimer's addled, stiff gait. Oh, and the Biden Fuhrer is also wearing sneakers, it says, and using a shorter staircase with kind of an elder adaptation on Air Force One. So over and over again, they're going to hide him. Now, you know that when they can, they're going to use his body double, because the body double doesn't walk as bad. But I guess ultimately they have trouble getting him in and out of there and doing the things that they have to do. If they keep using the body double, eventually they're going to get caught, although we already know they have been. It's funny, David. It just again shows the level of transparent. How stupid do they think people are? Answer? Well, they think Americans are really stupid. I don't know if they are as stupid as they believe or not. Go ahead.
It's elder abuse. You know,
yeah,
we all know, and for everyone to pretend, like when I say everyone, I mean the mainstream media, when everyone pretends like the emperor is actually wearing clothes when he isn't, it's an amazing thing to see that metaphor or that story that has been used so often. You know, here we are actually experiencing the stupidity of the American people, if they are so stupid as to buy into it. But no, this man is either a great actor and he's completely cognizant, or he's totally pretending so that, well, okay, that means he's a great actor, but the objective of that would be to find a way to get out from being tried for his crimes and abuse of power when things do fall apart, which is very likely will happen when Trump gets reelected.
If that's allowed, and I color me skeptical, David. I think what we've seen is they are going to pull out all the stops. We know that one of the other stops is being pulled out by communist China, and it's called, let's see, Volt Typhoon. It's a long, ongoing infiltration effort. It helps to have your man in the Oval Orifice. And essentially what they're doing is they're setting up cyber attacks. But now, given that they have their man in the White House, they have, as we know, battalion after battalion of communist Chinese troops and special forces already embedded in the United States. When they need to, we know this, they can bring down the country. They can attack at the same time that they take down parts of the power grid, the banking systems, the water systems, and so forth. They can bring their troops in. They can destroy the cities. I think there are a lot of ways, including, if they have to, just often the old guy in order to prevent an election. And we'll see how all that plays out. But in conclusion, I urge people, pay attention, know your rights, understand what's going on. Most importantly, of course, know who we serve and what he says we need to do. Hey, thanks, David. Chag Sameach to those keeping the Feast of Unleavened Bread this week. And Shabbat Shalom, folks.